So I got done with some Puck Daddy stuff, all of our predictions and previews.
Yeah.
And I go and meet Ruby and Sneakers at the dog park because it's been very busy and I haven't really been able to get a chance to take Sneakers to the park.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking to myself, this is fine. I'll be here for about 15 minutes and whatever.
What could I possibly miss in hockey?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then I'll just go home and I'll just blog, you know, whatever happens. And then some little snot-nosed American kid from Scottsdale decides to score goals on his first three National Hockey League shots.
I dare any Maple Leafs fan who has ever complained about the Jets going to the desert to try to do so again.
Right. Were it not for that Zamboni he saw once at a Coyotes game, he
were it
would
not
be playing
for,
hockey.
And you know what? And here's, if you want to draw the line even deeper and even further, if it weren't for that Zamboni that Austin Matthews fell in love with, because let's not forget, one of the more remarkable things about Austin Matthews is he started hockey from zero. Okay? Nobody in the family played. It's a baseball family. It's a football family. It is not a hockey family. There is no like, hey, my uncle played a little bit, and that's where young Austin gets it from. He started from zero to this athlete that you saw last night in Ottawa. Okay? And so, and it was the Zamboni that he loved watching. And the, you know who his favorite hockey player was growing up? The first hockey player he ever identified with?
Who's that?
Daniel Briere.
Really?
Daniel Briere was his guy. As a kid, going to Coyotes games, Daniel Briere was the guy for Austin Matthews. So between the Zamboni and Daniel Briere. But honestly, like I know I said it tongue-in-cheek last night on Twitter, but really, we've talked about this on the podcast before. And if your job as commissioner is to grow the game, I've said this a million times, if you put more teams in Canada, you will not make new fans. You will get more money, but you will not make new fans. You put a team in somewhere like Arizona, you will make new fans, and by extension with grassroots programs, you will make new hockey players.
Well, that's it. That's the opposite of the Globe and Mail editorial from yesterday, if you saw that.
I missed it. What did they say?
I forget who wrote it. It's a Globe and Mail column about how the NHL, it's basically spank bank material for Canadian hockey supremacists, and it's about how, you know, the bottom line is this. In a little over 2 weeks, the World Cup took in more revenue than the Phoenix Coyotes or the Florida Panthers generate in an entire season.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay,
The league put the equivalent of a new franchise in Toronto for a few days in September, and then, having fleeced the locals, it packed up its carnival tent, counting its winnings as it headed south for the winter. It began with a lament that Quebec City didn't get a team, continued that there are too many American teams.
Oh my God.
And really, it's something that could have been written at any point within the last
ever since
the NHL saved Ottawa from bankruptcy,
with the dollar program the NHL had saved Edmonton and saved Calgary as well. And there were plenty of nights where the building in Vancouver was half empty. Canadians continue to conveniently forget.
No, it's fine. No, it's Canada's game. I'm just happy that it took an American to save it in Toronto.
But here's the thing, and we saw it front and center yesterday on the early game and one of the late games as well. Now, for the first time in, I can't remember, you know, maybe going back to the, which era would it probably be? I can't even recall or think of one offhand. You have the two most exciting young hockey players playing in the same country, and that's Canada. You have Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid. You saw both of them at the height of their powers yesterday. Having said that, just a couple things, and we'll get more into Austin Matthews. How much of that game did you watch, the Ottawa-Toronto game?
Oh, I saw a good portion of it.
Okay, who was better? I know he didn't get the four goals, but who was a better player last night in your estimation, Mitch Marner or Austin Matthews?
Oof.
I thought Marner was the best player on the ice.
I'll plead the fifth.
Toronto, anyway.
I'll plead the fifth, and I'll take your word on it, because honestly, I was a lot more focused on Matthews than I was Marner.
Yeah, there was. I thought Marner was outstanding yesterday. Not to take anything away from Austin Matthews, and it's not a Canada-U.S. thing either, but I thought that, I kept saying, oh, yeah, send him to the juniors, send him back to London. I don't know. He was so good during the preseason. I don't know. He was so good last night in that first game against the Ottawa Senators.
Did you get a little bit of that? Didn't you get a little bit of that TNA feel last night, by the way?
Totally got that. Well, and with the Toronto game, that Nylander-Hyman
Matthews line
gave
right.
you that that TNA feel.
That TNA tingle, if you will, up your leg.
It's so true. And the other thing I want to point out before we do more gushing about Austin Matthews, and he didn't hear about it anywhere, but I do want to get it out there. So Austin Matthews scores 4 goals. You go down to the 3-on-3. If you're Mike Babcock, how do you not protect Austin Matthews? Why? Okay, here's my question. Why is Austin Matthews on the ice against 2 3-on-3 Sharks in Erik Karlsson and Kyle Turris? And then the minute Turris gets, you saw coming a mile away when he made that cut. All of a sudden, when Turris is in front of Austin Matthews, he's gonzo and the puck goes in. And who's got to wear it after the game? Not the guy that decided to put Austin Matthews there in his first game in the NHL after scoring 4 goals and keeping the Maple Leafs in that game. You know, not that guy, but rather Austin Matthews himself, who, yay, wonderful, scored the 4 goals, and that should be the story. But no, then he's got to wear the fact that it was his mistake that led to the game-winning goal by Ottawa. Yeah, that's on Babcock.
You could put it on Babcock.
It's on Babcock.
But at the end of the day, that's what needs to happen. I mean, he needs to learn to do all this
stuff. But hang on. I get that. But don't you read the situation and say, you know what? This is a great story. Now this isn't the teaching moment. This is a great story on day one. Let me protect this kid.
No,
you think just feed him?
I disagree.
Feed him to Karlsson and Turris?
Yes.
Are you nuts? Maybe the best 3-on-3 defenseman in the world right now in Erik Karlsson.
What's the best way to learn how to swim?
Throw
him in the deep end.
That's fine.
Throw him in the deep end.
Do it in January. Do it whenever the Maple Leafs are out. Do you do it on day one when it's such a good news story about Austin Matthews? I don't know that you do that on day one, bud. Honestly, I don't.
He's not a PR manager. He's a hockey coach.
No,
he's trying to get these guys to learn how to play right and learn how to win.
I know.
And the only way you're going to do that is to throw him in. Shut up, Sneakers.
No, Sneakers agrees with me. Sneakers is on my side of these things. Yeah, man, listen to Merrick. He's right. I'm barking it out. I don't know. I just thought in that situation, it's such a feel-good story, such a great story for that player, that family. I mean, the only people we saw on camera more than Austin Matthews yesterday were his parents, who were spectacular. Mom's crying. I mean, good luck. Good luck, right? It's a wonderful moment. Protect the guy. Okay, this isn't the middle of January and the Leafs have bowed out of this thing. This is day one in the nation's capital, opening night. Austin Matthews has scored 4 goals. All I'm saying is, and maybe this just comes down to coaching philosophy, if that's me, I'm protecting that kid and he's not out there against those Sharks. He's not.
Yeah. No. I disagree. I think the entire season's a teachable moment for these kids, and the more situations like that you put them in, the better it's going to be. And if nothing else, it allowed the media to hand bushels of cookies to Austin Matthews for taking it like a man after the game. Boy, what a leader! That was the reaction on social last night. I was like, what a leader to take responsibility for. I'm like, come, dude. It's real easy to say that you're responsible for losing a game when you're the only reason why you're even in overtime. Like it's, you know, I'm going to be real humble too if my team has 4 goals and I have all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, he was.
But it was super fun to watch. Hey, listen,
it was fun. I still think that Marner was the more impressive of the two.
Yeah.
I really do. I thought that he was exceptional last night, and I really need to check myself. And again, maybe not because it's just the first game, but every time you see, like all through preseason, I kept seeing himself. Yeah, he was great, but it's only preseason. And then the heavier puck drops in Ottawa last night, and all of a sudden Marner is the best player on the Maple Leafs.
And maybe I need to check myself
about my expectations.
I poo-pooed it last night, of course. I mean, like I said on Twitter last night, I was rechecking the bylaws of the CBA to see if there was any way we can redo the draft lottery because this was already insufferable. But
there's only one other team that you want him to go to, and that's Winnipeg. You take our team, we take your children.
But someone pointed out, though, that like there was a good chance Edmonton would have gotten him too, which is just, you know, I would have him on the list 50 times before I had thrown him in that abyss. But you know, it's interesting. I think this is great for hockey, for the Leafs to be better. It's great for hockey to have a star in Toronto, which he, by all accounts, seems he's going
to
be one.
Leafs need to be the evil empire.
Hang on.
The Leafs need to be the Yankees. They need to be the biggest, most powerful, most hated team in the NHL.
Yeah.
It's healthy for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
We're just at that point, though, with this thing, with Matthews, where the girl said yes to you for the prom, and instead of giving her a corsage, you give her an engagement ring. Like we're in the all in puppy dog eyes, hearts floating around the head moment, and it's just like it's a little sickly for me. It's a little too treacly for me.
If you're a Maple Leafs fan, and I know they get on Babcock about player selection and all that for overtime, wasn't that the perfect outcome for this season? You're competitive for all three periods. There's a wonderful story with one of your young players, and mm-hmm. you lose, but you still get a point. And you're still going to keep yourself in Nolan Patrick, Timothy Liljegren, Gabriel mm-hmm. Vilardi territory.
You've seen this kind of season with other teams. I go back to the early years of Ovechkin in Washington, which was also a team that had been strip mined, if you remember.
Yeah.
You had bad hockey teams and one incredible reason to watch them. And then you had some other guys. You had the young guns. You had your Backstrom. You had your Mike Green. You had the potential. You had the promise. And even in the most dire times, even in the most fumbly Keystone Cops defeats, you at least had a glimmer of hope for the future. And you're right. That's what you want. You want to maybe pick up points here and there, but not too many, and then lay the groundwork for what should be a giant leap forward next season.
You just make sure you hit on the draft and grab the Finleys and the Gustafson. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, but that
thanks.
But that brings us to the other team that you spoke about before, which is Edmonton. And where is you? We haven't done any sort of season preview-y stuff. Where's your head at on the Oilers? Are they in the close but no cigar year? Are they in the just looking for glimmers of hope year? Or are they in the playoff year?
I can't see them in the playoff year. I see them in the we're better than last year mode. And a matter of how much they stay healthy and how improved is the defense where everybody shoots left. Mode.
I have them just missing. I have
just,
them
be, just
I,
missing?
Yeah. I think Edmonton's going to be a team that actually gets close to the bubble. Maybe a last week, last 2 weeks kind of team.
Yep.
Ultimately, and I look like an idiot now because of what happened last night, but ultimately I have Calgary making the playoffs. And
so
the
do
three
I.
Seed in the
I have Calgary making the playoffs. I'm with you.
But I think Edmonton's right behind him, and then behind them is the Ducks. Because I just think, you know, Brandon Carlisle, all that jive.
More than just that, going to war with Hampus Lindholm doesn't tickle.
Right. I think this is the year where Connor gets them close, and then they have the breakthrough next season. But damn, they're real good. I mean, up front, they're tough to play.
They've always been great up front. The problem has never been up front. The problem has always been the bottom six and the defense who can't get them the puck.
Right.
No, it's always been that way. And the defense is a little bit better. Like, I don't think it's like leaps and bounds better. It's better, right? But I don't think this is like all of a sudden, you know, wow, it's Robinson, Savard, Lapointe. It's not that. They're a little better. They're a little better on the blue line.
And Cam Talbot's underrated for the job he did last year because it was a bad hockey team, and I thought he played well.
I'm still not all in yet. Still not. I know you're trying to bait me, trying to get me to bite on that one, but I can't. I can't yet. I can't.
What'd you think of the grand ceremony to open up Rexall Place?
Well, it's not
Rogers,
over yet.
Sorry,
so Rogers
Place.
I'm
sorry.
Not.
I wrote Rexall Place in a story last night, too. Rogers Place.
Don't call it Northlands. Well, I am reserving comments until the ceremony's done, and I don't think it's quite yet finished up yet. So when the ceremony is finally done, then I will pass judgment on what I thought. Holy smokes, was that long. Holy jeez, did that thing take forever.
It went on for a little bit.
Listen, the place looks nice. It's great. It looks beautiful. It's spectacular.
The logos on the lower bowl seats.
Oh, so good.
Are so
They're
cool.
They're great.
It's such a great idea.
Yes, it's fantastic. Home run. Well done. Bravo, taxpayers.
Yeah. I kind of wish the Devils had done that, the giant logos in the lower bowl, just so when the place is empty, they could say, well, we just wanted people to be able to see the logo better on television. The other thing that's great about that Edmonton ceremony is that we've had copious amounts of Daryl Cates in the last couple of days. And
finally.
Put a mic in front of that guy for as long as you can, huh? Boy, is he great.
Yeah. It's, he's,
an interesting sort.
I mean, you know, not that you want to spoil it yesterday because this was a day of celebration, but let's not lose sight of this was, you know, this is a taxpayer funded arena.
Yeah.
This was, you know, once upon a time, a veiled threat to move the team to Seattle.
Yeah, that's what, that's the best part of this Gretzky reunion is that you bring back the guy who was your advanced scout for a move to Seattle.
Which I just think was window dressing anyway to get what you wanted at a city council.
Yeah. Of course it was. I mean,
but this idea that like, oh, out of the benevolence of his heart, he decided to reach down into his pockets and no. I know that's the story you want to tell. You know, the benevolent owner. I get, you know, the story you want to spin. But we all saw it. It was all out in the open. We know how this thing went down.
We have Drew Amenda coming up, by the way, which is why we should probably get out all the negative stuff about the Oilers before the company man comes on. And
the one thing about, no, Drew can Bill Alfonso this and call it right down the middle. Bill can do that. Or Drew,
right.
Rather.
Listen, couple things. Let me hit you. God, I'm so sorry about this dog. I bought her.
Go, man. Sneakers is down with my program.
No, I gave her this new treat, this like sweet potato thing with like chicken broth, and apparently it's like crack. And I gave it to her right before we started doing the show, and now she's just staring at the bag.
It's because you baked it on the stove until it was crystallized
here,
and then put it in that pipe of yours.
Vamp for 10 seconds. I need to put this bag away.
Vamp for 10 seconds. Talk about how Austin Matthews is applying for Canadian citizenship, much to the chagrin of Greg Wyshynski. And for the first time since forever, the two most exciting young players in the NHL are both residing in Kanuckistan. One is in Edmundston. The other is in Toronto, Stan.
God, this happens all the time. This is exactly what always happens on primetime, right? Where McCowan's like, you guys vamp for a second. Got to put this dog treat bag away.
That's how all the pros do it. Yeah, just tap dance for a second here. Right. I'm gonna go put the potato dog treats away.
Let's bookend this Remenda hit with, because I know you hate predictions, but obviously I had to make them.
I'm at a place now where I'm whatever about them.
Good.
I'm coming off my, you know, I don't make predictions.
I want you to do what you do best though, and tell me how I'm wrong.
Okay.
Atlantic. I'm gonna go Lightning, Panthers, Montreal, Boston, all playoff teams.
No Detroit.
Sabres, Senators, which now I kind of regret. Detroit. Detroit, and then the Maple Leafs. I just think that this is, I mean, at some point they're going to have to fall off the cliff, the Red Wings, and it feels like this is the season where it happens. Now you've lost Datsyuk. Zetterberg should basically be in traction right now with the way his back is. You've got a lot of good young offensive players who may not be productive this season. Yep. And it's just, you look at that team and you say to yourself, when is the balloon burst as far as the amount of money they have committed to a roster that isn't good enough to win? Mm-hmm. And I think it's this season.
And you see things like walking away from Teemu Palkkanen and Martin Furkan in exchange for Steve Ott. Very un-Ken Holland-esque moves.
Oh, you mean like just throwing a flyer at Vanek for a season? Yes, very un-Ken Holland-like moves.
This is a transition time for the Detroit Red Wings, right? This is a transition time, and they're hoping there's enough there that they can hang on to some semblance of credibility and wins, that they can keep the streak, which is now at 25 years, going until Dylan Larkin is ready for prime time A level, and he's pretty close. Andreas Athanasiou, Joe Hickets, go right down the list of all their – Dennis Chalosky.
And let's not sleep
right
on
down,
Tatar,
right
Tatar down, and Nyquist either. They're both pretty damn good. And
Tatar and Nyquist as well. Now, no one's going to confuse them with Zetterberg and Datsyuk, though, just like no one's going to confuse, you know, future Blue Liner Joe Hickets for Nick Lidstrom.
Right.
It's just going to be a different team.
Right.
And I think that they're just hoping against hope that they have enough there to scratch into the playoffs to keep this win streak alive until the younger kids are really ready.
Do you agree Lightning, Panthers, Montreal, Boston for the playoffs?
To me, it's Tampa and then jump ball. And I think we have our expectations of Florida are, especially now when you consider the injuries, Bukestad, mm-hmm. but more specifically Huberto. I think our expectations might be too high from Florida or of the Florida Panthers.
It's possible, but that goaltending is real good, though. And even better than it was last year. What,
is
Reimer
it?
And Luongo?
Yeah.
Sure.
Reimer or Luongo's coming off of an injury.
But Reimer is better than Montoya.
Reimer is better than Montoya. I'm a big James Reimer guy. I'm not so sure that I like the 5 years on the contract, but I am a James Reimer guy.
Mm-hmm.
I just think we're all of this assumption that, you know, because they put together that, you know, 100-point season last year, that they're going to be right back in it. I don't know, man. Losing Brian Campbell's tough. Jágr's not getting any younger. And as long as, you know, there's an insistence that the puck on that line goes through him, you know, there's going to come a time when someone like Barkov says, you know, can we get him off the line? I know it's sacrilegious to talk about Jágr like that, but, you know, if it were anybody else, we wouldn't. But let's just be blunt. Like, there's not a future there.
No, but he's going to be good until January, and then he'll hit a wall, as usual.
Sure.
Yeah, right. What about the Habs? I think the Habs are, it's so funny. Like,
okay.
The entire summer was everybody taking a giant dump on the Habs, on Bergevin, on Therrien, on Shea Weber being an analytic piece of garbage.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, they could carry Price back, and they have a pretty damn good team. I think they're a playoff team.
Curious who breaks the puck out of that zone. You wonder what happens when Jeff Petrie comes back, what that means for Mikhail Sergachev. You wonder what happens with Beaulieu. Are they trying to move him? Are they going to hang on to him? Is he going to play some big minutes now that he has to take another step in his career? Alex Galchenyuk, legit first-line center for the entire season. Does the Radulov experiment work out? There's still a lot of question marks about Montreal. The one thing you can't question is Carey Price makes them better. Well, not tonight against Buffalo because he's not playing, but he makes them better. He makes them better right now.
He does. But I think your point about them getting out of their own zone is a valid one, because that blue line doesn't really impress anybody. And especially when you trade, you know, someone who's basically a stay-at-home guy now, you know, and flip him for your best puck mover. If you can get the puck in the offensive zone, though, I think you've got some guys that could do some damage there. I mean, I love Brendan Gallagher.
Yep.
I think the Radulov experiment's going to be successful. Shaw, say what you will, can be a disturber in the offensive zone. I kind of like him up front. I don't like him in the back.
If you hit pay dirt with Arturi Lehkonen, then, because I know a lot of will be focused on Radulov. But, you know, Lehkonen, the star from Frölunda, you know, too good for the Swedish Hockey League. Now he's coming to the NHL and he ain't going back. If you've really found something there, if you found a goal scorer there, then I'm really getting warmer to the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah. And also, if you just shut up and stick Galchenyuk in the middle and play him.
I think they're resigned to that now.
I hope so, because last year it was weird. It was almost like they didn't know how to spell Galchenyuk and they kept on spelling it Deharnay. Which is a weird glitch in the system there to be able to do that all the time.
I know. As long as Therrien would go back to his guy, it'd always be David Desharnais. I know it was a weird one.
In the Metro, I like the Capitals to win the division. I like the Penguins second. I like the Flyers third and the Rangers fourth. And those are your four playoff teams.
I'm really interested to see Philadelphia this year. That's going to be one of my speed bump teams to watch. You know, love Nashville, love Tampa. You know, really curious about Carolina, really curious about the Colorado Avalanche. But Philadelphia is going to be a fun team to watch. Like, I love the way that Ron Hextall has gone about this patiently.
Oh, yeah.
Where the mantra in Philadelphia has always been win now, do whatever, burn it down, get it, you know, do whatever it takes to get into the playoffs this year and do some damage. Hextall's taking his time.
I think some of the blooms off the rose when it comes to Dean Lombardi, especially after the World Cup. But that's definitely something he learned with the Kings. The Kings, say what you will about them, were an incredibly patient team for being in a market like that with their young players. And then the first thing they held their cards until the Jack Johnson for Jeff Carter deal, and then they got real aggressive.
I'm more impressed doing that in Philadelphia, with no disrespect to Los Angeles, aggressive hockey market where the demands are that much greater to do whatever it takes to do something in the playoffs. I think you had the luxury pre-Stanley Cups of doing that in Los Angeles, unlike the luxury which you didn't have in Philadelphia. I'm impressed with Ron Hextall.
Sure.
Like, listen, how many times do you think he got the phone call from Ed Snyder? Ron, what are you doing? I don't care about this first round pick. I want another Stanley Cup.
That's the frail elephant in the room, right, is the fact that you had a guy who the sounds were passing through the hourglass.
Yeah.
And when you have that happen, then you hand – things like the Brizgalov contract out to people. Mm-hmm. But I think it's obviously a different vision now for the Flyers. Less immediacy, let's say, than there was in the past.
Really want to see Provorov and
Gostis be here.
You love your Gostis be here. And listen, man, Travis Konecny had a hell of a preseason.
He did.
Now I see this guy playing pro with a heavier puck.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. They're a fun team. And I said often, as a Devils fan, it pains me how likable I find them. So the Penguins second. I mean, the contingent. It seems like the Sid concussion's not that bad.
Would
it
surprise you if he's back like early next week?
Yeah, I mean, according to Sid's already skating. Sid's kind of like it's going to be okay.
Yep.
What do you have any? You're an insider.
I am.
You have any intel? Yeah, sure. You have any intel on the great tangling?
No.
Sidney Crosby, the great tangling?
No. All I know is from people that I know who have talked to him said like it's not as obviously not as serious as you know the last situation with Sidney, and it sounds to me very like. More than anything else, Crosby's annoyed at this.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a matter of, oh, I got to protect my health and think of my future. I want to be able to play with my kids and tie my shoes. This is more like, oh, can we just get this over with so I can go back to playing? Because right now I'm the best in the world and I want to get back to showing everyone that I am.
He's right on the throne. I feel bad. I feel bad. It was crushing when I heard the concussion thing because, like you said, I don't think he's ever not been the best player in the world, but he's definitely reestablished his credentials in the last year.
Yep.
And it sucks that he had to go. And plus, you know, we all want to see what this team does in a full season with Mike Sullivan as a coach. I mean, we're dying to see it.
Yep.
So them second, Flyers third. A lot of people say the Rangers aren't going to make the playoffs this year.
I am one of them.
You think so?
Yeah.
Think it's time?
Yeah, I am one of them. I don't know. Look at the blue line.
I agree.
How much can Henrik Lundqvist do? How much can Henrik Lundqvist withstand Greg Wyshynski? I just don't love that blue line at all. And for whatever reason, Ryan McDonagh may be the one high-end defenseman in the NHL who puts himself in more positions to get injured than anybody else. Can you think of one other high-end defenseman that puts himself in situations where he gets nicked and dinged more than Ryan McDonagh?
Hmm.
I don't know.
I can't think of one.
I can't think of one either. I've been racking my brain about this one going back to first, you know, when you start to look at the season and what teams are going to look like, and you start to go through players. It's like, what's the interesting thing about Ryan McDonagh? And to me, the thing I keep coming back with is this guy always makes a decision that gets himself hurt.
Yeah, that's true. I think for me, I see the Rangers being good enough to make it. I agree with you. There's some real trouble. There's some mysteries, some trouble spots. I think Zibanejad's a mystery.
I like that move.
A mystery.
I like the Zibanejad move for New York.
You never know what you're getting out of Nash season to season.
Don't know.
There's a lot of question marks, but shut up, Sneakers.
No. Keep Sneakers on.
God, because she's a New York pup. Now she's defending the Rangers. She's telling me AV is going to find a way to get him in.
you're wrong about Dan Girardi, and here's why.
Yeah. Islanders fifth, NJD sixth, you know Carolina what? Seven,
yeah.
Columbus eight. I know, I'm going to guess. So hold on. So Washington, Pittsburgh, Philly are your playoff teams that you agree with. So who do you think the Islanders get in again?
Carolina.
So you're one of these Hurricanes guys, eh?
I'm hipster on Carolina. I'm Carolina Hurricanes. Yep. Give me some. Now, they've got a tough one. I think it's six games on the road to start the season. So to start the season, they got to come out with their heads above water. It's a tough go. I guess it always happens. I guess there's a fair in town that happens every year.
But their goaltending,
I know,
goaltending is worse than Dallas's.
I know. Their defense looks so good, though.
Sure, I'm sure. And they play the game the right way.
Aho, Teravainen, Lindholm, I know.
They're going to be fun. And Peters has them playing a good structured game.
Yeah.
I just don't know if you can get to the playoffs with that goaltending. That's the thing. Mm. Unless Eddie Lack's a hell of a lot better this year than he was last year and they give him the reins.
Yeah. We shall see, because our guest is standing by. More on Carolina in moments. Let's default to talk about the Edmonton Oilers. Greg, introduce our guest.
Joining us now on the line, one of the voices of the Edmonton Oilers, a longtime favorite on this very podcast, and the man who knows a thing or two about a thing or two, Drew Remenda joins us here to kick off the season. Drew, how's it going?
Hey, longtime favorite.
Oh, yes.
How long has it been since I've been on the show?
We do a hell of a lot fewer shows now, but also a longtime favorite in the sense that you've been joining us since we started this stupid show.
29 months it's been on since I've been on the show.
That's about right.
When the Sharks gas me, last time you guys
played. No, I protest this.
When I went to Edmonton to do McDavid's first game.
We were sitting and BSing with each other.
That was for the podcast. I had a recorder going. You didn't know that was for the podcast?
You know what? I had a lot of things to do anyway, you know, so it's okay. But, you know, I'm just saying.
Okay, let's warm up with this one. Over, under.
Yeah.
Okay? 65 fights. If Milan Lucic is going to fight every time anyone touches Connor McDavid, over, under 65 fights this season.
This coming from the star of Ice Guardians, by the way, everyone.
I hope you enjoyed that, by the way.
It was very good. It was really good. Yeah. You were excellent, but it's a really good. You know, I'm biased because like Jason, my buddy from Saskatchewan, but it's a really good movie.
It's a good dog.
I say it's under 65.
Okay. Right?
But
which would be a new record in the NHL.
It would be. But when you look at it, you know, it's interesting from the Ice Guardians thing, and I watched that movie and I've known Kelly and you know been around and you said something in the movie that was interesting, being that when the poll came out, 98% of the players in the NHL wanted to keep fighting in the game, and I was one of those guys going, oh man, come on, that's just ridiculous. But your point being, I'll acquiesce to the guys that are there that do this and that understand. So we showed this Ice Guardians movie, and we did a Q&A with Kelly Chase's Fantasy Camp about it, and Garth Butcher said something I thought was really key. You don't fight because you want to. You fight because you have to. So if you're out at the bar and somebody says something inappropriate to your wife or grabs her in the wrong place, like Donald Trump, then you have to step up, right? So Milan Lucic, I think for the first little while, is going to have to step up, but that's not what he's brought in for. You're going to have to at least make it look like you're not going to accept Connor getting knocked around. Although Connor's not made of glass. I know he got injured last year, but he's not made of glass. He's going to be okay. I mean, he's a big, tall, lanky kid, and he's going to get stronger as he gets older. I hope that Milan doesn't think that every time Connor gets touched, he has to go, because he doesn't. What they have to do is just make sure that, and Connor has to do this too, just make sure that when it is a gross or over the line hit, then you have to do something.
See, I've always maintained the one thing that we talked about, because I shot like about 3 hours with the guys on it. The one point that I was hoping that made it, which didn't, which is, in a lot of ways, what's more important than a fight is the threat of a fight.
Right.
Which actually is a deterrent, not actually the event itself.
That's a lot of, that's exactly right, and that's a lot of the ways that my wife gets me to do things.
Yeah, but okay, just as a follow-up then.
Yeah.
I mean, Drew, England barely touched him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, right.
Like, I didn't miss something, did I?
No, you didn't. It looked like
Lucic was going into that game saying, okay, I need to establish something, and I will look for any excuse to do so. Yeah.
Without question.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when I was working for the Sharks and he was doing that when he was in Boston or LA, of course that was ridiculous and that's terrible and you can't do stuff like that. Now it's like, way to go, Milan, good job. But you're absolutely right. There's a game last night, and then there's a game tomorrow night against the Flames. So yeah, he's absolutely, as Scarface once said, I'm setting my mark and enforcing it.
Yeah. All right. Listen, before we get to the Oilers that are still in Edmonton, let me talk about Yakupov for a second. Because when we saw each other in Edmonton last year, we had a long talk about Nail and his role, and you put him over as being a real sweetheart of a guy.
Yes.
And I wanted to get your take on what you think this move will do for him or could do for him, and maybe just like what the malfunction was there in Edmonton for him.
First off, the caveat there that when I start talking about players, I always say the same thing. And there's a coach that I know, when I say this, I really like him as a person. I always say that. The one coach who's actually a pretty successful coach in the National Hockey League has told me, what the hell has that got to do with anything? Has nothing to do with anything. Most guys in the National Hockey League are terrific people that you're going to like as a person. But I really like Yak as a person. That being said, I don't think he's a terrifically intelligent player. In junior at a high skill level, and that was exceeded pretty much everybody else that he played against. So those numbers were, like we've seen a lot of players in junior do, escalated up. He has a good first year and it's a lockout shortened year. But along the way, I think his discouragement at his lack of success where he thought he should be affected his practice habits and affected his attitude about getting better. To me, I saw him last year when he wasn't getting on the power play. And last year was a frustrating year. He plays with Connor and things are going great. And then he gets that freaky injury and then he can never get traction again. And he knows the coaches don't like him, but don't like the way he plays. And they're working with him but it's not taking. And he's not getting any traction and he gets frustrated. And I watch practice and power play unit goes out, like the Oilers practice power play all the time, and the first unit goes out, and I see him down in the neutral zone just shooting pucks up against the boards. And I'm thinking to myself, kid, if I was you, I'd be standing beside Todd McClellan and Jay Woodcroft and asking them 1,000 questions so I can get my ass back on that first power play unit or on a power play unit. And I think that was this indication to me that he had given up on trying to make or salvage something of the year last year. And it's natural because the team was lousy and they weren't winning and he wasn't getting anything going. And it's a natural feeling for him. He quit, but he certainly was discouraged enough that he thought it's not worth the effort. And then as Todd McClellan said, when you say, you know, I want out, it's hard to work your way back in. And I think that's what happened to him. I think as far as what he can do in St. Louis, he's got to start playing some straight line hockey. It's a straight line game, mm-hmm. and he's a zigzagger. He's a water bug, and he looks like he's working. He looks like he's accomplishing stuff. He looks like he has the effort. But if he would start going straight lines, he would be a much more effective player. And work on your career. Invest in your career. I watched Joe Pavelski go from a seventh-round draft choice to one of the premier players in the league because he had championship habits. His habits, his work habits during practice, off the ice, were contagious to some of those other players to the point where it was like, wow, Joe is making himself – I always say he's a self-made superstar, and he made himself that way by – bringing the assistant coach like Jay Woodcroft out and starting Jay's shooting club and getting in with Mike Potenza, the strength coach in San Jose, and working on his strength because he's not a very big guy. So I would like to see Neil Yakupov do that. If he invested in his career, I think he could have a career.
Do you find that, you know, he plays that traditional Russian style, left-hand shot, right side,
yeah.
So he wants to stick in the middle. He has a hard time, I mean, you're closer to coaching than I'll ever be, Drew. He has a hard time breaking the puck out on the right side as a left-hand shot, much better at it when he's on the left side, but he's not going to play that in the offensive zone. So if you're coaching Neil Yakupov, what do you do? Like, what do you do with the player? Like, what do you work on when the reality is, in his own zone, man, it's tough to break the puck out if you're Neil Yakupov, left-hand shot, right side?
I would tell him, well, first of all, what I'd probably do is I'd call Adam Oates.
Yeah.
And I'd say, Adam, what do you think? And, you know, Adam Oates has started this business of his. And I talked to Adam in the summer, same at the Kelly Chase thing, and it was really interesting to talking to him because telling me the stuff that he's doing with players, it's not sexy or it's not innovative. It's not, and he tells you the same thing. It's innovative, but it's not something, well, nobody's ever thought of before. You never see it. You see these things happen in a game play after play after play, shift after shift. You know, he worked with Darnell Nurse one day, he was telling me, for an hour, back retrieving pucks and moving them past that first forechecker, just again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have Neil Yakupov working whatever side I was going to put him on. I would probably switch sides with him. I'd probably put him on his left side,
mm-hmm.
See if he's going to be more comfortable. If not, I can move him back and forth. I'm kind of, even with wingers on left side, right side, and especially with all the defense talk, left-handed shot, right-handed shot, with all due respect to my good friend Mike Babcock, who I've known since we were 14 years old, I am really sick and tired of that talk, and I think it's overrated. I think it's overblown about how important it is to have a lefty-righty, because when he was in Detroit, he had mostly lefties, and they were pretty friggin' good.
Yeah, but that's Lidstrom.
Okay.
Come on, like, it doesn't matter if he's coming out of his own zone on his backhand or forehand, the puck's going out.
He had a lot of lefties.
Everybody was left. There's like two right-hand shots in Detroit.
Exactly.
But those are all all-stars, though.
He did pretty well with it.
Yeah, he did all right.
But I would be working with Nail daily on that stuff, and I'd be working daily with Nail on shooting the puck with accuracy. I would have him out before practice, and I'd have him out after practice, and I would just confront him with it. Do you want to have a career in the NHL? Do you want to be successful as you tell me you want to be? Do you really want to be? So don't just tell me you want to be. Show me you want to be, and I'll be there with you every step of the way. And we will work on this stuff together, and we'll work on those little details of the game that have left your game or have not yet taken root in your game in order to make you a better player. Or do you want to go back to the KHL? You let me know, and I'm with you either way.
Yeah,
and I talked to his agent too, because his agent, who I had the great experience of being around for a couple of years in San Jose as assistant coach, Igor Larionov, is one smart son of a gun, and I get him in on the conversations as well.
He's a professor, and also a winemaker as well.
Self-professed professor.
All right, so
Todd Shiraz is an excellent one.
Lucic, yeah. McDavid, Eberle,
yeah.
Maroon, Dreisaitl, Puljujärvi. Was that our top six last night?
Yeah. I thought Ryan Nugent-Hopkins at times looked really good, especially shorthanded. But those are your top six.
How confident are you that that'll be the top six in 2 months, or do you think that the Nuge might sneak up there?
Yeah, knowing Todd, I think there's a chance that there'll be changes. Todd's like a lot of coaches do now. They work top fours. You know, they work two guys together, and they try to insert a winger here and there that can complement, and if the line goes a little stagnant. I think coaches kind of overdo that now. I think they're tinkering too much. You know, Ryan Getzlaf talked to Bruce Boudreau last year and how much he jumps right away and tinkers with a line if something's not working in the first couple shifts. I think coaches would be better off letting players play through whatever ails them at that certain time in the first period or second period. But I think Ryan Nugent-Hopkins had a really good World Cup of Hockey championship. I think he can be better. I think he can be more of an important player than he was last year. He said last year he had lost his mojo, and being at the World Cup of Hockey got him back a little bit more confident playing with some of the best players in North America. So I think he can be more important. I think Puljujärvi has to be able to think the game at a faster rate. Yeah. So right now and Todd McClellan talked about Connor last year, giving himself permission to play in the National Hockey League, and all of a sudden the game opened up for him because Connor struggled early. And I think that Puljujärvi is going to have that chance to give himself permission to play in the National Hockey League. Last night's goal helped, but he's got to start thinking the game at a faster rate, and that'll allow his body to respond. But, you know, right now it's a whirlwind out there for him because he didn't have a very good training camp and he didn't have a very good preseason game. So last night that goal might have helped a little bit, giving him a little bit of a boost.
Got to big up my hometown here, Drew.
Yeah.
Former member of the Stouffville Spirit of the OJHL, Drake Cajula.
Wow.
Making the Edmonton. What did Drake Cajula stand out in North Dakota? What did Drake Cajula do to make this team?
Todd talked about it. He was competitive. He was a guy that, you know, being from your hometown, I'm not surprised. It was a guy who just competed for everything and every puck. He was a guy that, because of his size, has had to do that his whole life, being a fellow short member of society. You've got to battle, you know. You should see me battle for a position in the booth with Quinn. He's huge.
Elbows.
Oh, yeah. And plus, I fight really dirty.
Jiu-jitsu,
so,
guys.
You have to. He just competes. He competes for everything and every inch. Plus, he's got a pretty good hockey IQ. When he got his position, he was able to read and get his position on the ice for chances to score. He put it away. And Todd really liked him. He was, in fact, during preseason games, he was, besides Connor, he was the next most impressive player.
Yeah, Connor's pretty good from what I've seen.
I told him last year when he came back. I think it was after the goal against Columbus when he came back, and I said to him, and I think this was pretty sound advice. I said, you know, you may want to give this hockey thing a run for its money. you may have a career. I wasn't sure. But.
Don't you think his hockey brain works too fast, though? Don't you think he's too fast for everybody else? You literally need to go to Ilsa Nublar and clone Connor like he's a dinosaur, like Jurassic Park style, in order to actually have a successful team, because he's just too fast for everybody.
That's a hell of a reference, buddy. That's well done.
29 months. You miss us, Drew?
I have. Really, honestly, I have. I think playing with him is difficult because he is so fast and thinks so fast and reacts so fast and does everything three moves ahead of everybody else. He's Boris Spassky. He's Bobby Fischer. He's three, four moves ahead of everybody. He sees the game so well. But I think it's the issue of, for other players, figure it out and arrive on time. Don't race with him because you're not going to be able to keep up to him. Don't try to get up the ice the same time he does. Arrive at the right spot at the right time. Now, I'll go back to Igor Larionov. Igor wasn't a terrifically fast player, and certainly Sergei Makarov wasn't either when I was back in the 90s when I was able to coach him. But they arrived on time. They would be, you know, they would read the play ahead of time. They go where the puck is going to be, not where it is. And I think that's the key if you're going to play with them. I think Jordan Everly's starting to get it. Even Lucic got it yesterday. They both got set up a couple times by Connor for terrific chances that they weren't able to put away. So if you're able to start kind of, you know, playing chess with them and starting to advance up the board, make sure you just get your queen in the right spot at the right time.
You know, we saw this plenty when he played with the Erie Otters of the OHL in his last couple of seasons. I mean, there would be games where, you know, Connor would get to the offensive zone and he would do something that was so completely unexpected, throw the puck to, you know, whether it was, you know, Nick Betts or Nick Baptiste or one of these guys, and they were completely unprepared to accept the pass because no one thinks like that and no one does those things. Have you seen evidence so far of that happening with the Oilers roster, that Connor does something, throws a pass out in front at a totally unexpected time, and you treat it like it's a live grenade because you're not expecting it?
You know where I really saw it? Connor comes in his first game back after playing at the World Cup of Hockey, and they're playing Vancouver, and it's Lucic and Jordan Eberle with him. And Jordan's a pretty intelligent player. He did it about four times against Vancouver, and he was playing at such a pace ahead of everybody because he had been playing against the best in the world at playoff pace. And then he comes and he's playing preseason games, and there was a couple right by the net. Connor's got this neat little ability where he'll start to drive the net. He loves to drive towards the net. But most guys, when they get to a certain point, they know they're running out of real estate, they'll kick it back in the slot. Well, Connor hangs on to it right to the last second and keeps the goalie on the post, and then somehow is able to get the puck to a line mate. And he did it to Jordan Eberle, and Jordan, you could see Jordan thought the play was dead, and then all of a sudden it wasn't. You see it in practice every once in a while, and that's why I say you got to figure out where to be and when to be there. If you start to do that, you're going to have some pretty good numbers playing with that kid.
All right, last one for me, Drew. I think this is the season, as I said earlier on the podcast, in which the Oilers get close but do not smoke the cigar. I think they get within like 2 weeks of being around the playoff bubble, maybe last week of the season playoff bubble, but fall just short. Do you think this is a playoff team this year?
Here's what I do. I look at, and this is what you hear all the time in Edmonton, and I've heard it for now, this is three years. They're better. They're better. They're better. And what they're saying is they're better than they were last year. What I want to know is, who are you better than now in the conference?
Ah.
That's who are you better than now? So when I look across, and let's say the usual suspects get into the playoffs. So you got LA, Anaheim, San Jose, Chicago, St. Louis, Nashville, Dallas. Okay, that's I got one spot left now, counting on my hands. I got one spot left. So who are you going to beat? Are you going to be better than Minnesota? You got to find a way. I don't know if they're better than Minnesota. I think they're better than, like, I'm going to fall into that. They're better than they were last year, and I agree. I think they will be a team that will, up until near the end, be threatening to grab a wild card spot. It's going to be very tough. Todd McClellan talked about the other day. They got to find 45 goals. They either got to eliminate 45 goals from going in or score 45 more goals to be in that hunt for a playoff spot. So they got to find a combination of both. Power play, if they get that going, and it should be better. And they shouldn't allow two goals when you've got the power play. I don't know if you guys, my experience in hockey,
yeah,
when you allow two shorthanded goals when you're on the power play, it rarely works out like it did last night.
In general.
Yeah, in general. It's just, it's rule of thumb. But I think they'll, I agree with you. I think they'll be there. But I learned a great lesson from Kevin Constantine when I was assistant coach in San Jose. And it was the day one of training camp. And he got up to speak to everybody at training camp or sitting there. And I'm sitting beside Larionov and Makarov, because I knew them from kind of Hockey Canada international play. And Kevin Constantine gets up there. First thing he says is, and now take in mind, we had lost 71 games the year before. 71. And he said, here to make the playoffs. We're not here to be competitive. We're not here to be respectful. We're not here to be better. We're here to make the playoffs. And Igor Larionov turned and looked at Sergei Makarov and went, I thought we signed with the Sharks. And Mac, you know, Mac didn't say anything. Mac just kind of shrugged. But I think setting that goal is really important. Last year, Todd McClellan talked about we're not going to talk about the playoffs. We're going to talk about process. I thought that was a mistake. I think you have to talk about, because every player in that dressing room is talking about they're better. And the only way you're going to prove you're better is by winning, and winning makes you the playoffs. So I think you have to set that mark, set that goal, set that bar high, and say, that's where we're going. And if you're not on board with it, then you're not in the right place.
All right, last here. Hard-hitting question, the toughest one you're going to get all day,
yeah,
Drew.
Yeah.
Bob Nicholson has the burger, okay, at the New Barn.
Right.
When do we see a Drew Remenda food item on the concourse?
It's already there.
What do you got?
Pepsi.
Pepsi.
It's a Pepsi building, man. I drink like six a day. I've already had, I drove in from Edmonton this morning, Saskatoon. I've hit the road at 6:30. I've had three already.
How can you drink so much sugary drinks? You're like in great shape. You do like jujitsu nonstop. Like, how are you in such, how do you drink six Pepsis a day?
Well, then you don't eat anything. That's it. It's the eternal food source. And I'm sure that you know, that they're proving that Alzheimer's comes from, like, a diabetes 3 causes Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Yeah, I even forgot who I'm talking to right now.
That's freaking hilarious. It's like, Yvon Lambert used to tell rookies when he would room with them, look, when you play professional hockey, you can do one of two things. You can eat or you can drink. You can't do both.
Exactly.
I choose to drink.
Exactly. That's my key. And you know, the reason that I go to the gym is because of my motto, you can't be bald and fat.
Oh, I completely agree with that motto, man. That is so true. Except for in the case of Ken Bone, which I don't know if Ken Bone really transferred up to Canada or not.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, no. We got Bone Mania up here.
Fantastic.
That doesn't sound good. You got to rephrase that.
Yeah, no kidding. Thank you, Drew. It will not be 29 months until we speak again.
28?
Not even close, man. Just tell Connor to keep heating up. We'll get you on weekly.
Okay.
Thanks, pal.
All right, boys. Good talking to you.
Drew Remenda, color analyst for the Edmonton Oilers. Big win last night against the Calgary Flames on day one.
It was 12 months.
Was it
maybe less? I feel like he came on a show when you weren't there at some point during the season. Maybe Sam can.
I can't believe that
can
we wouldn't have
confirm or deny that.
Basis. He's one of our favorites coming back to the San Jose.
I have no idea.
I literally sat in the bowels of that asbestos-filled death trap and talked to him about the Oilers last year.
That's a classic arena that used to house a NHL and WHA team. You have a little bit of respect.
My greatest regret in life was not being able to go to the Northlands Motel across the street from the arena with a black light.
What was always the grossest there was the carpet. Whenever I'd walk into that, I'd go, ugh, this carpet, seen some things.
Carpet in general is kind of gross, isn't it?
When you get right down, yeah, because our place is pretty much all hardwood. I don't know about yours, because I've always had a weird thing about carpet, too. Like, what's been absorbed in there?
I feel like hardwood with an area rug is so much better because you could just chuck the rug. It's so labor intensive to get rid of carpeting. And in fact, this viewpoint has transferred over to my vehicle of choice, the Honda Element, which they no longer make, which had rubber floors.
You have an Element? The box on wheels?
That's right. And part of it was the rubber floors because I could eat all the Taco Bell I want in that car. And it all falls on the floor and there ain't no standing or nothing. Just a wet sponge to get rid of the evidence. All right. Western Conference, real quick here.
Yeah, man.
National Predators, Chicago Blackhawks, Blues, Stars, Wild make the playoffs. Colorado, Winnipeg don't. Yeah, anybody out of that top five you don't think is going to make it this year? Predators, Blackhawks, Blues, Stars, Wild. I've seen one crazy person on the Puck Daddy say the Stars aren't going to make it. I know it's just
one game, and I know it's team has won 3 Stanley Cups.
Mm-mm.
Every now and then you see a freak season.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible Chicago doesn't make it? I know. I feel so dumb saying it, but you talk about things catching up to you. Is this the year the salary cap really catches up to Chicago Blackhawks? I still think they're in, but I'm not gonna put on surprise face if they're not.
I think they're in too, only because I find it hard to believe that if it goes sideways and the kids aren't ready yet, and already you're seeing Mott, by the way, being put on Kane's line and Panarin being dropped down to Taves, I think they'll get aggressive and try to fix it. They know their window's still there, and they're not going to dig around.
Is it?
Oh, well, hold on.
Look at that bottom six.
Hold on. Look at that
bottom six.
There's a difference between our perception and their perception.
Right? Oh, for sure. Yeah, because you can still sell that to that marketplace.
Yeah, and also, as long as Marian Hossa walks this earth, they're going to think that they're in contention.
I'm gonna hate saying this because you know how much I have for Marian Hossa.
He's a third liner.
And it's catching up to him.
Of course.
And he's going to go down as being the greatest player to have never won the Selke, which he should have won at least once, probably two or three times.
What a very specific boast.
It's like Brad Park, right? The best defenseman to never win the Norris Trophy. Well, Marian Hossa, the best player to never win the Selke.
The best player. Well, I mean, I'm sure there's other, like Gordie Howe ever win the Selke? No, probably. The best defensive forward ever to win the Selke.
Yeah, Bob Gainey era. And on, so Gordy's not going to win that one.
All right, so maybe the Blackhawks, you say. Do you have confidence? Like, the Wild bother me because they're built poorly, but I just can't. Bruce is just, he's going to bring the pixie dust there and get him to be a playoff team.
I know, and I want to buy into that so much. I just look at the lineup and I say, can we please have the Michael Granlund that we see show up in international hockey in the NHL?
Right.
Because internationally, the guy is mint always. And mm-hmm. you're waiting for that to happen in Minnesota. I would like Zach Parise to go to Lourdes and get himself healed up properly so we can have that super wicked awesome Zach Parise that we're used to seeing, because that guy seems to be gone. Mm-hmm. And we saw that in the World Cup of Hockey.
Yep.
You want Niederreiter to take that next step. I still have a lot of love for Jason Zucker. I want the entire left side, essentially, was what I'm getting at. I want to see that left side hit on. And you want to see Charlie Coyle actualize as a legit top center.
Yeah.
Don't you?
So what is it about the Wild? Is it that they didn't capitalize when they had the chance? Or is it that this collection of young players that are one of the reasons why Suter and Parise felt comfortable signing there never actualized under the previous
Probably
coaches?
That, yeah. Just never actualized. Hmm. Or should have actualized by now. Yeah, there are a lot of people. And you talk to the, you get a lot of sort of international perspective when, and even NHL perspective as well, when you're part of something like the World Cup of Hockey. And I talked to a lot of guys and some players as well, who were pretty down on Suter in general. And I know it's a vague sort of amorphous criticism, but this idea that he doesn't play the hard minutes, that a lot of others, like it's a soft 30. And I don't know, like when you hear it from someone like me, you say, yeah, well, whatever, watch it on television, go to the game, whatever, guy. But when you start to hear it from players, like significant guys.
No, it's true. I've heard the same thing. You're not alone.
Like from players, right? Like, yeah, I'm not talking about just like guys like you and me, like, yeah. You know.
They all say the same thing, which is that if you look at Doughty's ice time and you look at Suter's ice time.
Different.
They might play the same amount of minutes, but Doughty's doing twice the work.
Right. Right. So it's not like you and me just eating a cookie, watching the game from Pluto and saying, yeah, soft minutes, dude. No, yeah. It's just like guys that are on the ice with them.
The Blues look really good last night, and I'm starting to wonder if the changing of the guard will end up benefiting them. But I come back to two basic things with them, which is that Jake Allen's a very good goaltender, but I'm a little bit worried about him with Carter Hutton as the safety net. And that's not to say Hutton's not good. I'm just like much more comfortable with Brian Elliott as the safety net. The other thing I can't figure out is what the hell that coaching situation is.
Yeah, it's a weirdo. Like, what happens when they go into a swoon, right? And Hitch is getting on a few guys, and you know that he's gone.
Yeah.
It starts warming to Mike Yeo.
Yeah. Right?
It is a weird, it's such a weird one. I know exactly what you mean. This one feels bizarre to me. I think it feels bizarre to everybody. Having said that, from day one, I said this is the year that St. Louis takes a half step back or maybe a full step back and then takes two steps forwards next season. You know, you may have to recalibrate it considering the level at which two players specifically are playing at right now. One of them is Vladimir Tarasenko, and the other is Colton Parayko. Parayko is out of his mind.
He's
great. He is so good.
And hopefully gets more power play time because I have him on my fantasy team.
He's got to put a leash on that shot, eh? Put a leash on the puppy. Like, get that thing down. Get it down.
Yes. The thing, I did some St. Louis radio hits yesterday, and I came back to the same thing, which is that it's not unprecedented to have the successor on the same bench as the incumbent. The unprecedented
thing.
It's
just never announced.
Is that it's announced. Right. Exactly. Exactly. There's situations all across this league where everybody knows as soon as the old man's getting canned, dude standing next to him's taking over.
As interim. That
right.
Yeah.
But this is, as interim, and then also it's unspoken.
Yeah.
But in here, it's not, it's head coach.
Oh, yeah.
And it's spoken. It's the most bizarre thing I've ever seen.
It really is. It's a unique one.
All right. Pacific Division. Kings, I have winning it, although now I'm really regretting
really,
it.
Really, eh?
Yeah, I felt like this was one of those years. Not only bounced back a little bit, but I as you know, I'm a Pete DeBoer diminishing returns acolyte.
Not me. I still got San Jose winning that one.
So I got the Kings, the Sharks, and the Flames making it, and then five out of the Central.
So hang on, Kings, Sharks, Flames,
Oilers, Ducks,
Ducks down,
Yotes, Nucks.
Yotes better this year.
They'll be better. Sure.
They're a more interesting team to watch. Everyone wants to watch Edmonton.
Well,
the obvious reasons, but I
hope
to
that,
me, I'm curious how Arizona plays.
I am curious too, and I hope that our friend John Chayka and Dave Tippett take a hint from our friends in Winnipeg and rid themselves of the cancer, suck the poison out, get rid of the bad goalie.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, like Winnipeg was in the same boat as Arizona. They're paying a lot of money to a mediocre goalie. And in the Jets case, they demoted him. In the Coyotes case, he's starting. So it's like some point.
I do like the Goligoski signing because a lot of times it was Oliver Ekman-Larsson stand the bunch.
Yeah.
I like that one. I am very curious to see how long Chychrun stays with the team. He's made the opening night roster. See if he stays the entire season or they send him back to the snarniest thing of the OHL.
Ain't nothing wrong with a little Domi Duclair action. Love him.
Well, it doesn't look like they're going to play together, though. It looks like it's going to be Kraus, Strome, and Duclair. Like, you want to talk about kids.
Strome, you know, if Austin Matthews didn't already win the Calder last night, Strome would have been a really interesting candidate. Although I picked Laine. Yeah, I could still see this Laine Matthews thing this season becoming Ovi Sid, where everybody's on the Matthews train, and then all of a sudden Laine steals it because he has like
bajillion goals.
Well, I mean, he's got some catching up to do, obviously.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's weird because there doesn't seem, like right away there was Taylor Tyler, and that was a thing, but there doesn't seem to be like Sid Ovi weren't 1-2 in the same draft, but there was always that thing. It doesn't seem as if there is a Matthews Laine.
No, but what's funny is that
battle line drawn.
Maybe it's because he was injured yesterday, and God willing, gets back quickly. But did Austin Matthews just elbow Jack Eichel out of the rivalry? Is it now Austin versus Connor?
Yeah. Well, if you watch Canadian sports television or listen to Canadian sports radio today, yesterday was all about, you know, Matthews East, McDavid West. And that's what you're watching hockey for. And that's why, and that sucks, man. And that injury absolutely sucks. That high ankle sprain, I mean, you almost would rather break it than have that one.
I was going back and reading six quotes about it.
Especially for his skating style specifically. Mm-hmm. Like, he looks like a raptor, right? Like, that's the way he skates.
Second Jurassic Park. Wait, do you mean the bird or the dinosaur?
What's that? The dinosaur. Okay. Yeah. Like, that's the way he looks when he skates. And he's so powerful. And I talked to someone before the podcast. I said, how much does that suck for that skating style? And he told me that is A, painful, and B, so harsh. To have that injury.
Forgive me for that question, by the way, because we all know dinosaurs did come from birds.
Well, birds came from dinosaurs, actually.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry.
Actually, dinosaurs came from birds, Jeff.
All right.
Bro science with Greg Wyshynski.
Yeah, we haven't had a new opening in a while, so just wanted to put that one out there for the inevitable Patrick M opening that'll come our way, or Mark Cole, rather.
Mark Cole's got that one.
All right, a couple of...
I gotta go to TV.
All right, real quick, do you have a puck pick? Do you have a cup pick?
I went Nashville and Tampa. I'm all in on Nashville this year. Mm-hmm. I am chips to the middle on the Nashville Predators. They will probably be, you know, outside of me working, a team whose games I don't miss at all, like full three periods, not an eye on another game at the same time. I am watching every single Nashville game. I am all in on that team.
I'll go, I went Washington and Nashville.
Okay.
Barry Trotz versus his old team. Capitals won last hurrah with at least four key free agents.
I'm really, you know what you're getting in Kuznetsov and Ovechkin and Backstrom and Carlson and also like right down the list, Holtby. The guy that I'm most interested in watching this year with the Washington Capitals is Andre Burakovsky.
Yeah.
Like, you're waiting for, like, another one to pop? All the potential is right there.
Top six role. I'm interested in what Orlov does.
Yeah.
I want to see a leap forward from Orlov because, obviously, they didn't commit to him long-term or anything. So, he's still kind of in show-me phase. So, I'm dying to see what he does here. Real quick, a couple things. James Quappian wants to know... can the Sabres stay afloat while Eichel is out? Well, I don't think they're going to be floating much anyway, to be honest with you, this season. But it's not. I mean, obviously, like, Okposo's out. Kulikov's not playing tonight. Some injuries off the hop here that are kind of disturbing.
I was excited to see that line with Kane and Reinhardt with Jack Eichel. And that was going to be top for that team.
Can they stay afloat? It's a terrible division, probably.
Yeah, like you have the benefit. I mean, okay, Tampa is the class of it. After that, like I said, it's Tampa and then jump ball.
Mm-hmm. Fat Guy Hockey, all right, wants to know, any chance the Wings go all in for Jacob Trouba and offer a DeKaiser Smith and an FCO Mantha Tatar type deal?
Whoa. First of all, that's not enough.
Right. They don't want DeKaiser. That's the thing. They've been offered DeKaiser from all accounts, and they didn't want him.
No, like, you want to get someone like Jacob Trouba? Like, I'm sorry. It's not going to take one of those, oh, we'll do it by volume. No. It's going to be quality. At the end of it, though, Kevin Cheveldayoff, this is a game that Kevin Cheveldayoff can't lose. Like, you can't set the precedent, oh, player wants out of Winnipeg, one of the most sensitive and fragile markets in the NHL. You know, not exactly a prime destination for, you can't set the precedent that guy complains, guy gets his way. Which is why I think at the end of all of this, Jacob Trouba is still a member of the Winnipeg Jets.
I completely agree. This is Drouin 2.0, without question. Finally, Kevin Dudley wants to know, what's the coolest thing you've done four times in one night? A little Austin Matthews question for you.
Well, not what you're thinking. The coolest thing you've done four times in one night.
I actually have a legit answer that's not sex. The answer would
eating
be...
Eating four burritos
no,
or gorditas
it's
the, doesn't
it's
count.
It's not food either, all for right. God's sakes. And okay. And by the way, I've only done a bang bang, which is from Louis. From Louis C.K. labels it a bang bang, which is when you go to two different restaurants to have full meals in the same day.
Oh!
I think of the same genre is also.
Okay.
Bang bangs have gotten easier now that McDonald's serves all day breakfast, by the way, because I've definitely gotten a sausage McMuffin with egg and fries. But I digress. I have hit blackjack four times in one night at a table.
Really?
Yeah. It's not a huge. I mean, there are probably people out there like, but I have my father's luck, and he's a terrible gambler. So four blackjacks in one night at a table was pretty damn good for me. And it was probably it was at the Hard Rock, and it was at Blogs with Balls in Vegas. And it was one of my best nights playing. I'm a pretty good blackjack player. Yeah. Pretty good at blackjack. I'm okay at craps because I am the a-hole at the table that bets against the shooter. And then I just bet wherever Ruby bets on roulette because she has a weird – it may be she can – it's like a telekinesis thing as far as like how many times she hits on roulette. But yeah, four times. What about you? Four plates of kale in one night?
I think mine would be boring. When I'm on the road, the first thing I always do when I get to a hotel is I always go for a run.
Masturbate. Oh. Okay.
Well, that's, yeah. Like, it owes me money. probably gone for I know when I was in Kelowna for Top Prospects a few years ago, I went for either three or four different runs on the same day because I loved running in Kelowna. So I get off the airplane, get to the hotel, go for a run, have lunch, go again, you know, go to the skills, go again, and then have dinner. And then I think I was just bored. I'm like, F it, I'm going to go for another run. I think the last one might have been treadmill in the gym, but the others were all outside. That's freaking boring. What a boring way to end the podcast. Matt, dude, I am freaking boring. All right? If you're just tuning into this podcast for the first time, Greg has a watchability ranking that I don't. Greg is much more interesting to follow. Like, if you're gonna watch one of our lives, watch Greg's. Don't watch mine.
That's true.
It's pretty boring.
What did you do on Tuesday night?
What did I do on Tuesday night? What was Tuesday night? Did I work?
You probably worked, right? I went to a Golden Girls puppet show.
What?
Yes. It was a 90-minute puppet show in which they basically recreate the Golden Girls.
I know what Tuesday was.
What?
Tuesday was, oh man, I remember, because the kids got down super early, and it's a bed at 9:30. I remember now. My wife and I were like, is it really this early? Like, yeah, let's go to sleep.
All right. So your point's taken.
Okay. Yeah, I'm boring. The boring guy. Dull guy. Me. All right. Welcome
best,
to it.
Best of luck to Jack Eichel in his recovery.
Amen.
Best of luck to Sidney Crosby in his recovery. Best of luck to Jonathan Quick in his recovery. As I said on Twitter the other day, ban the preseason and ban the opening night. World Cup forever. World Cup, no injuries, hardly. Real hockey, injuries out the wazoo.
I know, nonstop.
Nonstop. Congratulations to Steve Dangle and Leafs Nation on apparently turning the corner with this American on the roster. By the way, I made that American joke last night, and I'm like, it's good to see Toronto finally, you know, admitting that America is the best in hockey and embracing an American player. and I had a bunch of people be like, what about Phil Kessel? I'm like, you know, it's funny how that worked, where everybody completely forgot about those years when everybody was crying in their Alexander Keiths over Tyler Seguin being on the Bruins and lamenting the fact that Kessel was in Toronto. And everybody's like, what about Matt Sundin? I'm like, why is that even relevant? I said American. They're like, no, but he's not Canadian. I'm like, I don't give. Of course, you have a long history of loving Swedes. It's the Americans that I'm talking about.
We do too. Going back to Boris Salming, maybe not so much Inge Hammerstrom, but there's a good love of Swedes, which is why it wouldn't be the worst thing this year if the Maple Leafs bottom out. And I don't think it'd be a matter of choice. They might just do it organically and grab the Swedish defenseman Timothy Liljegren. Get to know your prospects, Greg.
Get to know
your prospects.
Put this guy on junior hockey coverage, and look what happens to this podcast.
Prospects.
It is prospect name
salad.
Well,
for all you USHL viewers, you all know about Eli Tolvanen.
Oh,
don't have to tell you about that.
No! I'm doing a podcast with Pierre. It finally happened. He's crossed over.
I will promise to limit my Pierre Maguire-isms during the podcast. Go get my phone.
All right. Thanks to Drew. Thanks to Drew. Thanks to Sam. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.